everyone, and welcome back to Casual Climbers, the podcast by and for beginning hikers and those who may not quite be physically ready to tackle the Appalachian Trail. I'm your host, Donna Padrick, and alongside me is my husband and adventure buddy, Roy.
Hey, Donna.
Hi, Roy.
It was a good day today.
It was a good day.
So in this podcast, we provide you with information, tips, and tricks on how to get into hiking here in the Blue Ridge area. We will cover some of the hundreds of trails in the various parks and forests in the region, and maybe entertain you a little bit along the way. Mm-hmm. So we're two middle-aged, not in the very best shape, hikers.
Definitely not in the best shape.
But we love the outdoors, and we want to share our experiences with you. In this week's episode, Donna, we discuss a short but really beautiful hike in South Carolina's Kiawe-Toxaway State Park, mm-hmm. the Natural Bridge Loop Trail. We'll also have a fun fact by you about the ancient Fort Prince George. Finally, we'll discuss nearby Sassafras Mountain Observation Tower atop the tallest mountain in the entire state of South Carolina.
Yeah, it's the highest point in South Carolina.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what do you say, Donna? Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
So here's the Natural Bridge Loop Trail by the numbers. The distance is 1.43 miles in a loop from the trailhead. The time it took us was 1 hour and 3 minutes at a comfortable pace. Of that, 40 minutes was moving time. The lowest point is 750 feet. The highest point is 975 feet. So you can see that there's a 225-foot elevation change from the lowest to the highest point. The friendliness of this trail, it was fairly easy. It was very well maintained. And of course, there is that 225 feet elevation change. But the big thing is there are several sets of steps, some of them 40 and 54 steps long. So it's not wheelchair friendly.
Right.
So Donna, why don't you tell us some of the highlights about this trail for the listener?
Well, this trail has one of my favorite things, which is benches. There were benches. The trail, you're supposed to go so from the parking area, you go about 50 feet in and then it becomes a loop. You can go left or right.
The trailhead is right there at the parking area. Mm-hmm. There's two levels of parking. There's an upper level and a lower level. There's a set of steps that's connecting the lower level to the upper level. And if you park on the upper level at the very end, you're going to be like 2 or 3 feet away from the trailhead. It's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, 50 feet in and then it'll branch off. So you can go to your left or your right. They kind of want you to go to your left, which is clockwise.
Clockwise.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of people, I think, choose to go to the right first because if you go to the left, you're starting the trail, you're going down. If you go to the right, you're starting going up. And I think some people think, I've got my energy at the beginning of the hike, so I want to go up first. That way I'm coming down. But either way, either side, you're going to be going down to the water on this hike.
That's right. So it is kind of a false flag
for you. It's misleading.
Because the lowest point of the trail is at the apex of the loop.
Right.
So whether you go left or whether you go right, you're going down mostly on the first half and up the entire time on the second half.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's some leveled out areas. It's not, I would not consider this a hard trail.
No, this was definitely I think barely break a sweat.
Yeah.
Probably closer to piece of cake.
Closer. There were some times on the way back when I was going up that I was like, okay.
but very few.
Yeah, very few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't bring our poles on this
one. I brought my backpack. You didn't bring your backpack. I brought an empty backpack. I just had my water bottle in my backpack. And I brought my backpack because it was a cold morning and I was wearing scarf and, you know.
You like to have
storage
area.
I like to have an empty
for your shedded clothes.
Right. If I get hot on a hike after a cold morning, sometimes you can get hot on a hike still. So I wanted something to put my scarf in and whatever, you know, when I start to get hot.
On this trail, I didn't bring any poles. I didn't bring my backpack, but I did bring my snazzy filtered water bottle, which I filled up twice.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I filled it up early, and then I filled it up at the main waterfall area.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, mountain water is amazing.
Yeah, it's the best. It really is.
You know, I don't want to tell you guys what to buy, but if you're going to be out there hiking in the mountains, get one of those. You won't regret it. Next week, I may have a very different product to review, but we'll save that for later. So one of the things about this, Donna, you and I took this trail last year, early summer, late spring.
Right.
I think it was in May, late May.
I think, yes. Yeah.
And it was exploding with mountain laurel.
Yes.
And I noticed today, as we were going through, there are mountain laurels almost at every single step of this trail.
There's these pockets of just mountain laurels on both sides of you. It's just you're encompassed by... Now, right now, it's just the mountain laurel bush, the plant.
Right, the flowers are not blooming yet.
Right, they're just budding. They're just...
You can see them. You can see them just starting to come out. And man, I can't wait to go back.
Yeah.
This is an easy enough hike. Now, it's 40 minutes from where we are. But honestly, I would do this in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
To see those mountain laurels.
And rhododendrons.
Yes, and the rhododendrons. There's plenty of rhododendron plants there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a short hike, right? It's 40 minutes if you just pushed yourself through. And we go at a comfortable pace. If you were pushing yourself, like if I were doing this trail by myself, I could easily get it done in 30 minutes. So if you want to do a really nice short hike and see amazing flowers when they're blooming and a nice waterfall or three or four, because there are a number of them on this trail.
Yeah.
This is a trail for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an amazing trail.
No. Yeah. Qualifier. I will call something a waterfall if it is more than I would go over in a kayak. That's the way I did.
Yeah,
so.
That's a good point, Donna. I think people, when they think waterfall, they think Angel Falls or something like that. It has to be 50 feet high to consider a waterfall.
I
don't think that way.
Yeah, we don't.
If it falls 12 to 18 inches or more, it's a waterfall.
To me, it is.
It's a waterfall.
Yeah.
Those can be so interesting. If you sit there and watch even those small waterfalls.
Yeah.
They're really quite beautiful and they're mesmerizing. You can sit there and watch a small waterfall and watch the paths that the water takes and the patterns that it makes in the water. And they're gorgeous.
It really is.
So the big one on this trail is probably about 15 to 20 feet tall. It's a decent sized waterfall. It's not massive like Rainbow Falls, 110 feet, but
what's really nice, though, is that it has a pool under the waterfall that you can play.
Yes. Last year, when we did this, there were a number of people playing in that pool. Now, it's not very big. It's probably 15 by 15 feet, maybe, do you think?
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. There are parts of it that are 2, maybe 2.5 feet deep. But you can get there. It's right there. You can get there. You can put your head under the waterfall. You can sit in this crystal clear, cool water. There's a little beach there, so you could put chairs, a number of chairs. The beach is pretty good size.
Yep, yep.
If you wanted to, and just enjoy that space. Now, I don't really recommend it because in the summer, this is a pretty popular trail. So you're going to have a ton of people walking by. So if you just want a relaxing time, you're probably not going to get it because there's going to be a whole bunch of people there.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned that there were benches on this trail. When I say that there are benches, there's no benches down by the water down there. There's a couple of benches that are just inside at the beginning of the trail.
There are two benches clockwise on the way to the waterfall and then one on the way back.
Right. So I think that they kind of just put those benches there for the people that are done with the hike, whichever direction you went in, because that's when you're going to be considering taking a break and sitting down and being like, oh my gosh, let me catch my breath. If you are, you know, more unfit than us.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't have to stop at all on this trip. We made it through. And there are a number of rocks that you can sit on, a number of down trees that you can sit on. There's plenty of places to stop. You probably won't need to rest on this trail.
Yeah. We came across an older couple they had gone the opposite way.
They went counterclockwise.
Yeah. That woman was leaving that man in the dust, but yeah.
He didn't look like he was huffing and puffing.
Well, he had his little hiking poles.
He had his poles.
Yeah.
Maybe they just had an argument and she was just like, I'm going without you.
I don't know.
I don't know, but they were pretty far apart. They were a good couple minutes.
They were. I mean, you were like, are you sure they're together?
Yeah.
And I was like, I think they're together.
They might not have been. They might have been just two people.
I don't know.
I
think they were together.
They might have been. I don't know. If you two are listening out there, which is improbable, but maybe. If you two are listening out there.
A shout out.
I hope you guys do good.
Yeah.
I hope you're doing all right.
Yeah, maybe it was just a mutual, hey, let's go for a walk on a trip. You give me a head start because I need to be away from you for a minute.
Is that Donna saying that to Roy? No. Or are you putting yourself in the lady spot? Listeners, Donna just said she needs a break from me.
No, I didn't. Not overtly.
So one thing we haven't talked about yet are the steps.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of sets of steps, but two major ones. There are 40 steps going down if you're going clockwise, 0.3 miles in. And then there's another 54 steps going up at 0.7 miles in just after you pass the bigger waterfall. Now, if you're going counterclockwise, you can reverse those. So just be aware of that. It's not wheelchair friendly.
Right.
Most trails are not wheelchair friendly. But, you know, for a lot of this, I feel like you could probably get around with one of those mobility scooters for a lot of the trail.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Not that. But there is something that we did today that we'll talk about later that is mobility. Like, it's,
yes.
Yeah, wheelchair.
We're
going to
talk about that in our area review of Sassafras Mountain Observation
Yes.
Point. Yes. You guys are in for a treat with this one.
Yeah.
So why, Donna, is this trail called the Natural Bridge Loop?
Okay. So I have a confession to make. Roy and I were talking about the Natural Bridge Trail earlier after we did the hike. And I was talking about the Natural Bridge being this log that is across the water, and you have a really nice view of the waterfall. You can stop and take a picture of the waterfall. It's a log that's been halved, and I thought that was the Natural Bridge. Natural, it's a log.
It's a log.
It's yes. But then Roy was like, "No, Donna," and that yeah, like he's like, "That's not the Natural Bridge." And then we were going to. He's like, "This is the," and he showed me a picture. I did not realize that I was walking across the Natural Bridge when I was walking across the Natural
Yes.
Bridge because it's a big rock.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed now looking back thinking about it because when you're walking across this rock, I was not really aware that there was water underneath it.
It's a massive boulder.
It's a boulder,
it's
yes.
It's probably... I don't even know if it's a boulder. It might just be part of the mountain. It is easily 50 feet long.
It's huge.
The part that you walk across.
It's huge.
But here's the thing, listeners. If you go to the left or to the right, now this is off the beaten path. It's off the trail, but you can easily get to it. Don and I both did today, and you'll see pictures. I put them on our trail photo site. The water over eons has found a way through the rock. And it has washed away a hole between the mountain itself and this boulder. So there is an opening going through this boulder. And so you walk across it, and that's the Natural Bridge that they're talking about.
Right. So you walk across it, and you come around, and if you go down to where we went, you can see the water underneath what you just walked across. It doesn't feel like you're walking across a bridge. It feels like you're just walking
on a boulder. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then.
Can you imagine the amount of time that it took nature to create that?
Because
it's if you look at it, it is smooth as glass under there. So it was definitely water that caused that.
So I can't. I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm not the only one who thinks that log bridge is the
Natural Bridge.
Natural Bridge. Yeah. I'm gonna say that there are others out there who think that that's...
Probably. Yeah. Because, honestly, unless you know that's what it is,
mm-hmm.
you have no idea that you're walking over a boulder bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was one really neat thing that you and I saw that kind of baffled us. On the side of this rock face that goes up, there is a tree that looks like it has fallen over, but it is growing down the side of the mountain and then across this other boulder. Now, I would say, oh, it's just dead and fallen, but this tree follows the curves of the rock. So it has grown there at least at some point.
Right. It's a zigzag tree.
It's a zigzag tree going following, and it's not going up. It's going down and out.
It's a U-to-U tree.
It is a very much a U-to-U tree.
It's just like you guys can just grow straight up and be boring. I'm gonna be a zigzag tree.
I'm gonna be a zigzag tree going down and out.
Yeah. You do you. Whatever works.
Whatever. And it's crazy because it's like the root system is sideways.
But it looks like the root system is growing out of the rock.
It totally is growing out of the rock. Yeah.
I don't understand how that happens.
None of that makes sense to me. Maybe if there's some arborists out there, maybe some plant scientists.
Did you get pictures of
it?
You got pictures. Yeah, and I did too.
The problem is it's really hard to tell.
I know.
Because there's a lot of other branches and stuff in the way.
Yeah, we need to, like,
the pictures aren't terribly clear.
We need to look at our pictures and see if we can enhance what we're talking about, the zigzag tree behind that. Because you can't get super close to it.
No, it's what, 25 feet up maybe from the ground?
Yeah.
Yeah. And pretty far away from where you are. Yeah, it's hard to tell, and you can't really get a sense of it because there's
craggy
rocks
though.
All over. Yeah, it's very clearly a zigzag tree.
I'm gonna see if I can get a picture.
Okay. If you can narrow that down, we'll put the photo up on the website. Sure.
I'll do like this, like some lines where the tree is.
Yeah. Here's an arrow of where the tree is.
Yeah.
You know, for as short as this trail is, you know, only being less than a mile and a half and taking 40 minutes to do, it was a surprisingly enjoyable trail.
Yeah.
I honestly think I enjoyed this trail more than I did Rainbow Falls.
I 100% enjoyed this trip because I don't feel like I'm going to die right now.
I'm not going to be swollen tomorrow because of it. Yeah, no, it's a really nice, quick trail. And you could spend as much or as little time as you want. If you wanted to just race through it, you can get through in under 30 minutes. But you could easily spend 3 hours there.
Sure. I would go back and have a picnic lunch there at the water, you know, on a warmer day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would actually not go to the main area. I would go down by the natural bridge because you can get down to a littler pool of water, but nobody goes there.
Well, I mean, as far as we know, nobody goes there. We don't really know. Maybe
it took us a hot minute to get down there.
Well, that's because we're afraid of breaking bones and stuff.
Yeah. And ruining nature. We don't want to ruin nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how would you rate this trail?
Oh my gosh. How would I rate it? Tell me again our rating system.
So we have piece of cake, break a sweat, feel the burn, pain bringer.
It's definitely, I would give it piece of cake, except the only break a sweat stuff for me would be just going up stairs and up stuff. And there was one point after the waterfall where the trail got a little narrow. And you know I don't like it when the trail gets narrow and there's leaves and it's like straight down. That part makes me nervous. This was not that. This seems like a lot of trails have this. It's like the scare factor for me.
Well,
so
yeah.
I don't want to slip on leaves and fall off a mountain. That's not how I want to go.
There were parts of this trail that were narrow, but very few.
Very few and very short. Few. And so, I mean, so
it's between piece of cake and break a sweat.
Yeah, but break a sweat, not in the sense that you break a sweat because you're working really hard on this trail. For me, it was break a sweat because I was worried in those little moments. But I would totally do this like 1,000 times.
Absolutely. Especially when the mountain laurels are blooming.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
This is, I can't stress this enough to people who don't know what a mountain laurel bunch looks like a bunch of mountain laurel trees. It's simply spectacular. It's these bright white little cup flowers by the thousands or millions, just amazing. It's an amazing experience. And the first time I had ever seen Mountain Laurels was last year up here.
Yeah.
And I was like, this might be my new favorite plant of all times. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely gorgeous. And so you guys are going to get to see that in subsequent podcasts when we submit the pictures on the website.
Yeah.
The Mountain Laurels are going to start to show up. So you're going to get, you guys are going to see them with us.
And this trail is particularly beautiful for them.
There's so many Mountain Laurel plants. Bushes, trees. Yeah. There's whatever. So many.
Yeah.
So many, so many. So would you recommend this to anybody, Donna?
Heck yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Without question.
Hands down.
Oh, so.
We did see a dog.
So. We did see a dog. Here's a note about this. This is one of the only state parks where you actually don't have to pay to park.
What is it? A welcome center or whatever?
The park shop.
Yeah. That's not staffed as much as other state parks where you do have to pay.
Right.
So that's one thing. It is a really nice.
It's a nice little interpretive center. Mm-hmm. Now, the shop aspect is very minimal.
Yeah.
Very, very minimal. They have very few things. But again, but they have an interpretive center with a big old map, a topographical map. A 3D topographical map that's right in the center. Two nice bathrooms.
But it's not open all the time.
It's not. So the lady said, the park ranger there said, Linda, I think was her name.
Yes.
She was very nice.
Yes.
She said soon, she couldn't quantify that date, it will be open Thursday through Monday, 10 to 6.
Okay.
Yeah. As it is now, it is only open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 10 to 6.
Okay.
But soon it will be open 10 to 6. Now, the park itself, you can get to anytime.
Right.
So
that doesn't have to be open.
No, it doesn't have to be open.
I don't know if there are bathrooms besides what's in there.
There are not. Okay. Those are the only bathrooms.
Okay. So if you go and that's not open, then don't.
You're going to have to go somewhere else. And I will tell you this. The next closest bathroom is probably 10 minutes away down the road on Highway 11 from Kiwi Talks Away. It's pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, official bathroom, but, you know, you just...
Yeah, I mean, you could pee in the woods. I do. I also would recommend this to everybody.
Yeah.
Anybody in the area, especially in the summer,
mm-hmm.
when the Mountain Laurels are blooming. I would... Matter of fact, if we have guests come this summer, this will be the first place I take them.
Yeah.
If Mountain Laurels are blooming.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey. Let's go here.
Even if the Mountain Laurels are at the end of their blooming cycle when they're raining on you.
Oh, that's just nice.
Yeah, it's another kind of, I mean, we're sad to see the flowers go, but they're like white flowers just raining on you for, I don't know how long it lasted. It lasted
2 weeks, maybe
something. Yeah.
Longer. Their life cycle is pretty long. Maybe 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months. It might even be 2 months.
Yeah.
We'll have to map it this year when they come out and when they're gone. So yeah, Natural Bridge Trail Loop is a winner in our book. Something we'll definitely go back to probably over and over again.
Highly recommend.
Yeah, highly recommend. So Donna, what's today's fun fact?
I'm glad you asked. So I have a question for you. Did you know that Lake Kiwi in South Carolina is a man-made lake?
I did not. It's huge.
Yeah. It is. In fact, all the major lakes in South Carolina are man-made lakes.
All of them?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
All the major lakes, in South Carolina.
Wow.
That means that there's some stuff under these lakes, you know, like towns, houses, history. Lake Kiwi is important. They didn't just make a lake to make a lake. The Kiwi Talks Away Project was an award-winning energy-producing endeavor. They took forest and farmland and turned it into a source of hydroelectric power. It's also an 18,000-acre Clearwater playground.
That water is crystal clear.
Yeah.
In Kiwi Lake. It's crystal clear.
It's the prettiest, clearest water.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the clearest water in South Carolina.
Is it? Mm-hmm. And that says a lot because at Devil's Fork, that lake, I think it's Lake Jocassee, maybe,
mm-hmm.
is crystal clear as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Duke Power began buying Kiwi land in the 1940s, but this idea was first talked about in 1911. They recognized the rock as being just a really good, that was a really good place for building this hydroelectric power.
So what was it, a valley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a valley that was...
rock-lined.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the article I read interviewed a man named Ed Few, who was 24 years old when they started filling the lake. And I feel kind of bad for the guy because he was born in a house that's now at the bottom of Lake Kiwi.
No.
Yeah. His grandfather owned 600 acres in the valley, including a spot about 3 miles north of what is now the Kiwi River Dam. That was once the site of Fort Prince George.
Fort Prince George has come up before in this podcast. Yeah. When the Cherokee decided to fight back against the colonists.
Mm-hmm. So the fort, built in 1753, was part of Kiwi Town, the center of an 18th century Cherokee Nation business hub.
Yeah, if I remember right, from the podcast, there were 7 lower towns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oconee, that we covered in the Oconee Station State Park podcast, was one of the smaller ones, but Kiwi was the primary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cherokee had been asking for this fort since 1743, so 10 years. They got it in 1753.
They asked for the fort?
Yes. This was during a time when the Cherokee were deciding who to make an alliance with. So, well, all the Native Americans were deciding that. So it was about who is going to control the New World. Spain controlled Florida. France controlled the area around New Orleans and a lot of the Mississippi River all the way up to Canada. The British had...
Did they really?
Yes.
I mean, I knew they controlled New Orleans and Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew they controlled Central Canada because Montreal, Quebec
well,
is there.
Well, that's the connection. The Mississippi River up to Canada.
Yeah, I guess yeah. That makes sense.
Yep.
Wow.
The more you know.
Or the little I know.
The British had the Atlantic coast, but there was a catch. All the cities were along the ports and harbors. So the interior of the English colonies was Indian territory. Thinly settled by colonists. Extremely vulnerable.
So you got the French on the west,
mm-hmm.
the English on the east,
mm-hmm.
and the natives in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, which one of these jackholes do I choose to align myself
yeah,
with? The lesser of two evils, that, really.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Which one of these white devils am I gonna, yeah. you know, which one is going, you know, with the white people with their forked tongues and their promises and everything,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the English were vulnerable, and the French and the Indians knew it. Worse yet, almost all of the Indian tribes from New England to Charlestown had taken sides already, or were in the process of deciding whether to side with the French or the British. So at this point, I'm wondering, where are the... I mean, I know that the Spanish are in Florida, but why aren't the Spanish getting in on this? You know, like, why aren't the Spanish more... problematic in this.
From what I understand, the Spanish tried to push north, but by the time they had enough forces in Florida, because really they still at this point thought there was gold in Florida, so on them.
I mean, but they did find the Fountain of Youth and all that.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody, you know, stayed young forever. But by this time, Savannah had already been settled, so the British were pretty strong in Georgia. So from what I understand, the Spanish did not have enough money or people to push further north.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense.
They sure gave the Seminole a hard time, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the French were trying the hard sell with the Cherokee like every day. The French were like, want to side with us? Want to side with us? Want to side with us? Want to side with us?
Come on. We are French.
Exactly.
Let's go have a baguette.
That's right.
The natives are like, we don't even know what that is.
Yep.
Why are you talking weird?
Yeah. So this is why the British governor, James Glenn, decided to build this fort for the Cherokee. Because he saw the French schmoozing the Cherokee, and then he's like, I gotta get him on.
I gotta get up in that.
Yep. The British governor, James Glenn, he's quoted as saying, if the Cherokees had allied with the French, we would all be having croissants for breakfast instead of grits. Now, I have to say, I like croissants better.
Croissant's not bad. Grits is better,
you
in
think
my
so?
Opinion.
I don't. Yeah.
But I don't. English people don't eat grits. They eat porridge.
Huh. I don't know why he's quoted as saying that then.
Know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe he ate grits when he was over here. I wonder if the Native Americans introduced him to grits. Is
I would think so. It's corn, right?
Yeah. 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 So the Cherokee wanted this fort to impress their enemies, the Creeks, but also to have a more convenient way to talk to the colonial government without having to go all the way to Charlestown. So I measured how far it would be to go to 230 miles by car today. So that's with straight roads and stuff.
Right. Going 60 or 70 miles an hour. Imagine going 4 miles an hour at best.
Yeah.
Through a winding route.
So they wanted this. Yeah. Yeah. That would be a pain in the butt.
Yeah. It'd be awful.
Yeah. So they wanted the fort. So the fort got built. Besides the French threat, Governor Glenn was interested in making alliance with the Cherokee because the deerskin trade was so lucrative for the British government. During the height of the deerskin trade in the 1740s, more than 160,000 deerskins were coming into and being shipped out of Charlestown. Lots of deer were dying at this time.
Yeah, that's fair. But natives were always very good about ensuring that they didn't negatively impact the population.
They were. They were. Yeah. But they were getting pressure from the British to
get more.
Get more. Yeah. Wow. This is the deerskin industry. That's what paid to make South Carolina a plantation state.
I wonder how many raccoon skins they passed off as deer.
I don't think that happened.
No, it's totally, it's a small deer. Oh, it's small.
No.
This looks like a raccoon. It's not. It's a new gray deer that has a striped.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But anyway, in London, South Carolina was called the favorite colony because of all the deerskin and all the money that was coming in.
Was it
from,
really?
Yes. Wow. South Carolina was the favorite colony.
But I don't know if that's a good thing.
I would say that certain people did not think it was a good thing.
I wouldn't think so.
The ones that had to work the plantations that were being formed.
I don't know what you're talking about. They were there willingly and well compensated.
Okay. This this also changed the Cherokee.
Hashtag sarcasm.
Okay, yes. So the Cherokee culture was changing as well. The Cherokee women, in particular, complained loudly. And I'm doing air quotes. You can't see that because this is a microphone.
But it's an audio podcast. Can't see air quotes.
Yeah.
But we got it.
Complained loudly that they were so busy dressing deerskins, they didn't have time to take care of their kids or tend the cornfields, etc. They couldn't do anything else because they were busy.
Doing nothing getting deerskin ready.
Because the British could not get enough deerskins. They were just addicted to deerskins.
Do you know what they were getting in return for the deerskin?
I don't know.
Okay.
Probably not enough if the British crown was benefiting so much.
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't equal compensation. I think they were probably getting guns.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe food that the natives couldn't grow. Yeah.
The Cherokee were becoming addicted to British trade goods. That was the next thing. So this is all in the 1740s, 1750s. But the Cherokee had a really good reputation with the white man from back in 1715. They were kind of famous for, they saved the white man's butts. There was a war, the Yemassee War. And it was well known at the time that Charleston and, well, the South Carolina coast and the North Carolina coast, the Yemassee War, they were going to eradicate the white man in 1715.
Is Yemassee a tribe? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And the Cherokee initially sided with the Yemassee. They were like, yeah, you know what? These people need to go.
They're natives.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So their values align more than they would with the colonists.
But then, for some reason, the Cherokee changed their mind, and they decided it was in their best interest to help the British colonists. And when the Cherokee turned, and they said, no, you know what? Let's not murder all these nice white people who are probably not going to be taking our land and doing bad things.
What could possibly happen?
Right. They stood in the way, and they protected, and they saved the white men. And
so the Cherokee fought back the Yemassee.
Yes.
Wow.
For Charlestown and
for the coastal
yeah.
Cities, yeah.
Yeah. So this is why Governor Glenn, when he forged the alliance with the Cherokee, it was a great thing. He was on board with it
because we have an ally now.
Yes. Yeah. A really important ally. Like they pretty much, the way the story is told, the Cherokee turned around and just kind of gave like the Yemassee like a look. They were like, I'm serious.
They gave him the stink eye and said, hey, I'm super serious, you guys.
Yeah, you got to go.
And the Yemassee are like, this is too much.
Yeah, they were like, okay, well, they're probably not going to be all that bad anyway, the white people, so.
Fine.
So then there was peace for a while. The first commander of the frontier fort, Lachlan McIntosh.
Oh, that's a good Scottish name, Lachlan.
Yeah. Yes.
Lachlan McIntosh.
Lachlan McIntosh. Yep.
It's my fort.
He had a mutually respectful relationship with the Cherokee.
Oh, good.
Yes. For several years, he had an open door policy. It was common to see Cherokee women camped in the area around the fort, cooking dinner on a campfire while the men conducted business with Lachlan McIntosh inside. Yeah, I didn't find a whole lot of information about that. Was really it. He just was a nice guy. He had a good rapport with the Cherokee people.
That
yeah.
is an unusual story for back then, mm-hmm. but that's good.
Yeah.
All right. Good on you, Lachlan.
Yeah, so this fort had a good start. It had a really good start.
Nice. Its story can only end well.
Right. Or maybe not.
No, it's going to end well.
Okay. So the purpose of the fort, the Cherokee could come and lodge complaints against trader abuses and other issues that came up.
Wow.
It was just a nice...
It sounds like it was working how it was intended.
It served a very important purpose.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then, bum, bum, bum. In 1759.
I knew it was coming.
Some Cherokee got the call to arms to volunteer and go up to Pennsylvania to fight with the British against the French and the French allied Indians. There were 24.
This is the French and Indian War then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, right. yeah. They fought with a young George Washington, and George Washington said, 500 Indians have it more in their power to annoy the inhabitants than 10 times their number of regulars. For besides the advantageous way they have of fighting in the woods, their cunning and craft are not to be equaled, neither their activity and indefatigable mm-hmm. sufferings. And then I stopped quoting George Washington because he says hard words, but
it gets wordy.
Yeah,
Washington was liberal with his language,
but he said good stuff.
That is a pretty impressive compliment coming from Washington.
And so it turns out this style of fighting that George Washington witnessed from the Cherokee, this style of fighting played an important role in the American Revolution.
So, how so?
Well, because that's how the Americans beat back the British by fighting
this guerrilla style warfare.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because so there's this movie, The Patriot, for any of you that haven't seen it, that illustrates this really well.
Mm-hmm.
The British army at the time were, let's all stand in a line across a field from each other and just shoot straight at each other.
Yeah.
Which is the dumbest possible way to go.
But that's how gentlemen fight.
That is apparently, yeah. right? And so this method was stealthy and attack in small groups.
Hide behind trees and bushes.
Exactly. You're not standing in a line waiting for somebody to shoot you.
Yeah, the Cherokee must have, I mean, Native Americans in general must have just thought that, like, how in the world have white men lived this long?
How are they so powerful?
Yeah.
Look at them. They're standing there waiting to be shot.
They're like sitting ducks.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, the, the Cherokee helped George Washington and the British and everything.
Nice.
And they, they did a good job, right?
And
the Cherokee has this custom. If I fight in your war and we win, you give us gifts. You say thank you and you give us gifts and like we're recognized and whatnot. Whatever.
I think that's totally reasonable.
Compensation, right? The British had no such custom. And
so did they just expect him to fight for nothing?
They probably fed them while they were there or something. I don't know. But
they could have eaten by themselves.
Oh my God.
Outside of a war.
So after the war, the British were like, bye to the Cherokee.
Of course they were.
Yeah. Thanks. And the Cherokee had to walk 700 miles home. They didn't even give them horses.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I can kind of see that because the horses were a prime then, but no compensation at all.
That's
nonsense.
Yeah.
So it's souring a bit.
Oh, yeah. So these 24 Cherokee are walking home and they're walking through Virginia in Augusta County, Virginia. They found some horses grazing in a field and decided to take them.
Okay.
A Virginian saw them, take them, and got his friends. And he's like, hey, these Cherokee are taking our horses. And so this posse of Virginians get together and they hunt down the Cherokee that took the horses and they kill 12 of the 24. Oof. The other 12 get back. And
so the natives probably didn't think anything about it. They probably thought these are wild horses.
I don't know
or
if they thought that.
At the very least, nobody's around.
Right. I mean, they were probably pretty. I mean, they're walking from Pennsylvania.
I can't imagine.
I cannot. Yeah. I just. And at the time, there was like if you turned in the scalps of Native Americans in Virginia at the time, you get a reward.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So
that's fun.
Oh God. I'm sorry. Some of this makes my stomach hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, 12 of the 22 are killed. Did I say 24? I don't know.
You said 24.
Yeah.
But it was 22?
Yeah, it was 22. So 10 made it back. Yeah.
Still over half.
Right.
Were killed.
So the Cherokee started some raids on traders and colonists. We massacre Shocker. You. You Shocker. Massacre us. It went on. 24 Cherokee headmen, which I guess are like councilmen, you know, like they're led by Oconostota.
Oconostota was a pretty important Cherokee leader.
The great warrior of Chota. Mm-hmm. So 24 Cherokee headmen led by Oconostota, marched down to Charlestown to try to settle the affair. The new governor, William Henry Littleton, he had them put in chains because that'll make it better, right?
Imprisoning somebody always makes things better.
These were councilmen trying to settle a dispute.
These were Cherokee leaders.
Yes.
Just trying to have a civil conversation.
Yeah. And Governor William, he's like, oh, I'm going to show my muscle and put them all in chains. And then he marched the chains. So they had gone that long distance to Charleston. He put them in chains and then he marched the Cherokee headmen back up to Fort Prince George and confined them in a small cramped room at the fort.
Right there, Kiwi Talks Away.
Yep.
Okay.
The one that started with all these
good intentions.
Yes. Yeah. So as it turns out, there was a smallpox epidemic that broke out. And so Littleton quickly drafted a peace treaty that changed nothing, released Oconostota and two other Cherokee headmen, and peaced out to Charleston to get away from the germs.
Oh, he was there in Prince George? Prince George Fort? Or Prince George?
Yeah, he went to... He marched the Cherokee headmen back up to Fort Prince George and confined them, and then there was a smallpox epidemic.
And he's like,
I'm gonna peace out. Yeah.
I don't want to get sick.
He wrote something up real quick that said, oh, okay, we're at peace now, but didn't address any of the issues.
Right.
And then he left.
Time to hit the old dusty trail.
Exactly. Exactly. So nice. He left poor Lieutenant Richard Coatmore to deal with his decisions.
So, Lieutenant, this is a junior officer.
Yeah, this poor guy.
This is a young guy who's in over his head right
now. Oh, my gosh. Yep. Yes. So, Oconostota, the other councilmen are in there. It's just him and two others that were released. So, he goes to the fort and he lures Lieutenant Coatmore out of the fort.
Oh, this poor bastard right
here. Yeah. And he has his Cherokee that are hiding in the bushes around. They killed Lieutenant Coatmore and his attendant, Ensign Bell. So the panicked soldiers inside the fort then kill the rest of the Cherokee prisoners.
It just keeps escalating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My stomach starts hurting even more.
Oh, man.
So anyway, this is what begins the Cherokee War.
Oh,
this
okay.
At this fort, this thing happened.
That is now under the water that mm-hmm. we were at today.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what started the Cherokee War. So lots of stuff happened at that fort. So historians believe that the Cherokee War that began at Fort Prince George, which is now under Lake Kiwi, this was the tipping point for the American Revolution because it cost the British crown a lot of money, that Cherokee War, which meant that they were going to impose ridiculous taxes on the colonists to pay, because of course the king's not going to pay for it, right? So
and he's not going to make the British citizens that
right.
pay.
So yeah. I got a great idea. Let's tax the Stamp Act and all mm-hmm. of that. That's all happening right after he's like, okay, this is costing a lot of money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Pickens County Historical Society is trying to get a historically accurate reconstruction of Fort Prince George built near its original location. The fort was only 200 foot square and the walls were 12 to 15 feet high. So
that's not that big.
No, it's not that big. So that big. I'm hoping that the Pickens County Historical Society gets that done.
That's a lot of money,
though.
That's a lot of money. But yeah, we'll donate.
Yeah.
I want to see it.
I do, too. I do, too. Very much so. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. So, all that happened, and it's now underwater.
Yeah.
And the fort remains are still underwater.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad. Kind of a downer a little bit.
Well, so Linda at the park office today, she said that divers go down there and they take pictures and you can get like scuba certified by going down.
Oh, nice. And I bet scuba diving in those lakes is amazing.
Oh, yeah. And can you, I mean, it's sad to me that we've lost history by, you know, there, who knows what's down there, you know.
I know that before they filled it in, before they released the water from the dam, they gave archaeologists 18 months to uncover as much stuff as they could in there. And they got some stuff. Not as much as you would think that there would be.
So the guy that I was talking about at the beginning of this fun fact, the guy who was born down there and his grandfather owned land there, he was sad that he didn't get to be there when the archaeologists were excavating stuff. He was away in the Vietnam War at the time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yep.
I mean, glad he made it back.
Yeah. He was gone 2 years. And when he left, there was no lake. And when he came back, there was Lake
Kiwi. It was a lake?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I can't. Just,
you have a, and so listeners, look on a map. Lake Kiwi is not small. It is a big lake.
Yeah. And that cool water cools down something to do with the hydro.
Oh, the Duke Energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plant there.
But before it was Lake Kiwi, it was Kiwi River. And the guy that I mentioned at the beginning, he used to fish in that river and he loved it. He said it was the cleanest, clearest, most beautiful river.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. Just looking at the mountain streams and the rivers out there, mm-hmm. they're crystal clear.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a great fun fact, Donna.
Yeah.
You really dug in with this one.
I did. I just kept wanting to go until there was something happy to say. So.
Well, here's the happy part. We had a great hike today.
Yeah.
And this land has so much rich history.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in let's not lose the lessons from history.
Yeah.
And let's not lose history itself, the stories from history. And so I'm glad that the Pickens County Historical Society is doing this.
Trying to bring it back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a museum that we need to visit.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll hit that next weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Promise? I'm going to make you pinky promise.
Pinky promise.
Okay.
Thank you, Donna. That was a great fun fact.
Yeah.
All right, Donna. Today's review is a little different than our typical reviews. Normally, we review a local business or a product. But this time, we're going to review Sassafras Mountain Observation Tower.
Yep.
Sassafras Mountain Observation Tower is only 30 minutes away from Kiwi Talks Away. But it's through some incredibly enjoyable, winding mountain roads.
Yeah.
A little bit about Sassafras Mountain. Sassafras is the highest point in the state of South Carolina at 3,553 feet. And what's really interesting about this particular observation tower is that you can see South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia on clear days from there.
Yep. And today was a clear day.
And today was a beautifully clear day. So, Donna, tell us your impressions of the observation tower.
I'm so glad we went there. This was on my list of things I wanted to do. And we're coming up on living up here for 1 year. And I'm glad that we got up there before the year was up. This is definitely a place that I want to bring your mom the next time she comes to visit. Maybe bring my mom.
Absolutely. It costs nothing.
Yeah.
You can park for free. You can walk up there for free. It costs nothing.
Yeah, I don't know if my mom has been there. My mom has lived here for a lot of years, but I don't know if she's explored around there. But yeah, so there is a wheelchair ramp. You can wheelchair ramp up there.
Yes, from the parking lot to get up to the observation tower is a pretty steep climb, but it is paved.
Yeah.
So you could get a wheelchair up there if you had somebody really strong pushing it
or a motorized
scooter.
Yeah.
Sure. But it is entirely possible. And once you get to the tower building,
if it's you and me pushing somebody up there, I think we're pushing, like you take one handle, I'll take one handle, and we'll both push with all of our might.
Yeah. It's steep. It's at least a 15 degree grade going up. It's pretty steep.
Bring your hover around.
Absolutely.
Bring it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once you get there, there is a wheelchair ramp that winds its way to the top.
Yeah.
So it is wheelchair accessible.
We took the other way, though. We walked up the other way Wait.
We went up and then went up the steps.
Yes.
So there's the steps that you can go up as well.
Yeah. And that wasn't too bad. I mean, so the way that we went, it looks like it's ramp all the way, but it's not. If you take a wheelchair up the way we went, you're going to come across some steps.
Yeah. You go around the backside.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's where the wheelchair ramp going up the top is.
Yeah.
Once you get up to the steps, you go up to the top, and then that's where the whole observation view is. It's really kind of neat. They have the compass points in the ground.
Yeah.
And then what was really interesting to me is the North Carolina-South Carolina border line.
Yes.
Runs smack dab through the middle.
Through the middle. Like, it's on the concrete. It's
painted. Right.
It's along, like, as I walked up the stairs on the side that was North Carolina, and you walked up the stairs on the side that was South Carolina. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, you can stand, you can have a foot in each state on there. It is really kind of nice. The tower itself was completed in 2019, and the incline is steep. So just keep that in mind, guys. Don't be afraid to stop.
It's not a long walk, though.
It's not. It's nothing like Clingman's Dome.
Right.
Clingman's Dome takes you a good 30 minutes to get up the top.
It's like a mini Clingman's Dome. It's like condensed that down. But it really... rewarding views.
It's gorgeous up there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. On a clear day like it was today.
Mm-hmm. Blue skies.
You could see, I mean, as far as you could see, 50 miles, they say. You can see 50 miles.
Yeah. I think I saw a Cherokee Trail tree on the road going up to...
Did you?
There. Yeah. So it makes sense. I mean, I can imagine that the Cherokee would have used this spot to see their... you know, enemies or whatever as a lookout.
As the highest mountain.
Yeah, as the highest area, point. Yeah.
It would have been special to them in some way.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's got strategery.
You're going to get a shoe thrown at you. Watch out. Yeah. So it was a neat little side excursion. Now, I don't really see you spending, you know, hours and hours there, but we were there 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Looking around, there wasn't a whole lot of people there.
Honestly, so we took a few selfies there.
We did.
My nose was so red because I was so cold.
It was. It did get chilly up there. I mean, 3,553 feet is not small.
Yeah.
That's and not like...
The higher you get, the colder it gets.
Yeah. When the area we lived in Florida was below sea level.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. Merritt Island is 2 feet below sea level. It's -2. So 3,553, when we were driving up there,
yeah.
I felt my ears pop several times.
Yeah, I popped my ears several times. Like your water bottle will like expand when you're going up and then it'll suck in when you're going down because of the pressure. And you have to like, you had to put the Jeep in second gear on the way down
so I wouldn't, you know, just burn ride out the brakes the whole time. Yeah. The drive itself, if you guys have never driven in the mountains, I love driving in the mountains.
Yeah.
I absolutely love driving in the mountains. I go slow. Not so slow that, you know, I get a trail of cars honking at me, but slower than a lot of some of these mountain drivers do. They like to burn through these curves thinking they're, I don't know,
Mario Andretti
or whatever. Oh. But I don't even want to give them the professional. I want to give them daredevil status. And on the way down, yeah, I mean, you can smell on some of these things, you can smell brakes all the way down. When people are just riding their brakes. So I always try to be careful and use the transmission for that more than my brakes.
Or at least in conjunction with.
Yeah. Yeah. In conjunction with. I don't use the whole transmission, but the drive up there is gorgeous. The drive down is gorgeous. When you get there, I found plenty of parking. There's probably 20 spots, maybe.
I think there was a couple of bathrooms up there.
Yes. Yeah. There was a bathroom stall there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looked like maybe a permanent porta potty kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. We didn't check it out.
We didn't go in, so we don't know what the situation there is. But there was maybe 15 people up there when we went there. So it wasn't overly crowded. The observation area itself is pretty big. Probably 30 feet by 30 feet. It's in a kind of a circular format.
Yeah, which is what reminds me of Clingman's Dome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really nice. It was a nice side trip. If you're in the area, I highly recommend doing it. It's absolutely free. And, you know, the walk up to the tower is not bad.
Yeah. No, it's not bad.
No, it's not bad.
You were kind of being a crybaby when you were like, it's a really steep grade.
Was I being a crybaby? Yeah. I don't recall being a crybaby about this.
I actually was the one that was like, okay, I need to go a little slower.
Putting that on me. Not cool, Donna. So if you want to go, the address is 1391 Continental Divide Road, Sunset, South Carolina, 29685. And it's interesting that they say Continental Divide because the Continental Divide runs right through it too.
Yeah. That is fascinating.
Yeah. Okay. So if you guys ever want to, if you're in the area, like I said, go to Sassafras Mountain Observation
Tower. And the road there, it's so funny because GPS kept saying, welcome to North Carolina. Welcome to South Carolina. Welcome to... You're like zigzagging in and out of North Carolina and South Carolina just getting there.
Just getting there. Yeah.
So the
It's cool. It's neat.
Your
it's
GPS so... is so confused. Your GPS is like, okay, where are you trying to go?
Just pick a state. Yeah. Sassafras Mountain Observation Tower. Totally worth the side trip.
Yeah.
I highly encourage everybody to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our episode this week, guys. The Natural Bridge Loop Trail at Kiawe-Toksaway State Park in South Carolina. It's a beautiful, very short 30 to 40 minute hike, or you could spend much more time there if you decide to linger. It's free to park there at the state park. It's one of the only ones that is free. They have a nice little ranger station there with a small shop, but really nice interpretive displays. We also talked about Sassafras Mountain Observation Tower, which is definitely on one of our highlights of things to do every year. I highly recommend that you go to it. And then we had a wonderful fun fact by Donna about the now submerged, historically very significant Fort Prince George there in Pickens County, South Carolina. So it was a jam-packed episode, and I hope you guys enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed recording it for you.
And thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe to us in whatever podcast app you use and be sure to leave us a review. That's how our show grows. Feel free to check out our trail photos at casualclimbers.podbean.com. And if you have a question, comment, or just want to drop us a line, you can reach us at casualclimberspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you out on the trail.
But before we see you out on the trail, though, Donna, I'm thinking we both need to get scuba certified and then dive down there and see if we can find anything.
That water's so cold.
It's cold, but we have wetsuits and stuff.
I mean, sort of, I guess.
No, it'd be great. Let's do it. Okay. Let's get scuba certified and go down to Fort Prince George.
I would be happy to snorkel. I don't know about scuba.
That water's like 300 feet deep in places.
I can probably see.
We could probably... We can probably see, but we're not getting down. We can get down 10 feet with a snorkel.
All right.
You on board? Scuba certified?
Yeah.
All right. Then we'll start a scuba podcast. We'll call it Casual Divers. See you out on the trails, everybody.